what an effort that is. A wonderful goal, Matthijs.
Martin Albion have promoted to the Championship.
Middlesbrough's Premier League exile is over.
Any managers, hit me up on the WhatsApp.
Good evening. I'm Rich Hillson, and tonight I'm the special guest host of the V2 Football Podcast. You lucky people, you. I'm joined by two pillars of the podcasting world, Shane and Blasters. And still on the hike to Brighton, Davey. How are you both?
Yeah, I'm alright.
So to kick off the show, there's a few quick stories that have caught my eye this week that I want to share with you all. First up is a player who over the years I've shown my admiration for as a shining example of everything that's right in a modern footballer, my good old friend Carlos Tevez. Yes, this week the little Judas, who's raking in 615 grand a week, yes a week, decided to miss his team's Shanghai Senua away game versus Shangchung Yatai, I hope I pronounced any of them right, to go and visit the local Disneyland. Though as many parents will know, it's probably a good job that he earns that much, knowing that how much Disneyland charge for their meals. From one dirty rat on to another, in the Danish Super League this week, it was a heated derby between Brøndby and Copenhagen, as the Copenhagen player Ludwig Ostensten went to take a corner. He was pelted with dead rats. Now, firstly, I wonder from this, when in the mindset of a fan do they take the conscious decision to bring a number of dead rodents to a football match? On a whim, I wouldn't even dream of throwing an empty Fanta bottle in the direction of the pitch. Well, that's some serious planning going on to both collect and then bring several dead rats to a football match with the intention of opposing fans.
Where did they get the rats from is the important question. Did they buy them in Pets at Home, or did they go out to the bins and be like, right, when you find one, smash it?
So, well, there were several as well. It wasn't just like, oh, I found one dead rat. There's several involved.
Yeah,
I did. I know there's a pest problem at Sainsbury's, so maybe they've gone down to all the back areas around there.
It's that kind of level of coordination and, you know, creativity that makes you think, if there's ever an invasion of Denmark, these are the people who aren't leading the resistance.
Like the dad's army with a...
Yeah.
For you two, then, what's the oddest thing you've both seen being thrown onto a pitch at a match?
An old man.
Or literally thrown on?
I mean, yes. I mean, it was partially thrown on and partially fallen and, like, squeezed out onto the pitch. And this was actually at the Southampton-West Brom game when somebody fell onto an old man in front of him. And then as they tried to pick him up, just sort of lobbed him. And he went over the advertising hoardings and very quickly came back. And the stewards were like, yeah, that was clearly not intentional. But yeah, he was technically thrown onto the pitch.
I'm trying to think what mine is. Going on the football pitch. I did quite like the pigs that have been thrown on at the Coventry game at Blue Sky. I don't know about that, obviously, that's not really striking to it. To be honest with you. I know once we've like sort of started celebrating goals with celery.
Was it the Blackpool game? I think a couple of years ago, and obviously, like Blackpool have had a load of issues over the last few years, where they had a pitch invasion, and one of the guys that invaded the pitch was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Northampton. That's coordination to invade a pitch in a wheelchair.
Northampton's playing that once in League Two as well, and I think first onwards
have
got a wheelchair as well.
I know in Germany, I've seen them throw toilet roll onto the pitch before, and they did it as an entire like stand once, and it just delayed the game for about 20 minutes because they had to get all the toilet roll off afterwards.
Well, similar to that, at Macclesfield Town, my local club, there was a period of a few games in which Mac hadn't scored for, you know, something like 1,000 minutes. So several fans had collected all the balls that had sort of flown out of the ground over the past few weeks together, and they did a collective effort of kicking all the balls back onto the pitch at the same time. So it sort of became like a multi-ball soccer game, and they still didn't score though. Right, moving on now, we've got the Player of the Week award. Hopefully, Nick, you're going to be so kind as to announce the players that are involved in the results. I guess Nick isn't that kind.
Well, luckily, I do have the results right here. I may not be Nick, but I'll have to do. Okay, the four people who we had nominated this week were Ander Herrera for his performance v Chelsea, Hongmin Son for his performance versus Bournemouth, Vincent Kompany for his very unfortunately good performance against Southampton, and Ashley Young for his performance against Chelsea. Now, I chose Ashley Young, and of course, he came last with 5% of the vote. In second to last was Vincent Kompany, and I'm quite pleased about that because he wasn't that good. Stop making it out to be more. In second place was Hongmin Son against Bournemouth with 13%. So that means in first place was Ander Herrera with 63% for his masterclass in showing how to stop Hazard existing.
That was just, if any kids out there wanting to know how to mark a player, and, Eden Hazard is a top, top player, but he didn't have a sniff of that ball, did he, in that game?
No, that was quality. It was absolutely superb for Aaron.
I mean,
I don't think Hazard's found his way out of Herrera's pocket yet.
It was one of those things. I have a friend who really thinks N'Golo Kante is absolutely terrible and was telling me in the entire build-up to the game that Kante was going to be terrible and Herrera was going to be amazing. So it was really quite annoying when that turned out to be accurate. But it was absolutely top performance from a player I absolutely despise.
Do you not a Herrera fan?
I mean, I don't like players who are dirty and scream when they're touched and dive and do some of the worst dirty fouls going. Herrera is all of that and more. He's a perfectly good player, don't get me wrong, he's very talented. He's just scum, or Spanish.
He's like a mini Busquets, isn't he?
Yeah, but more annoying, because his face is also...
Want to be one of the most annoying players on the planet.
Herrera's got a much more punchable face, which is what makes it worse. And he's like extra Spanish. Like Sergio Busquets, he could be German with a name like that. He'd be unlikely, but he could be German. Ander Herrera, he's always just going to be Spanish. He probably wants Gibraltar and wants Argentina to invade the Falklands, and he just sleeps all day and throws a donkey out of a window.
Hi there to all our Spanish listeners tonight.
Hola!
Continuing on from that game and the Spurs result, it's now a 4-point gap at the top of the table, with both teams having six games left around the champions. With two losses in the past three games, are Chelsea now showing signs of bottling it, or have Spurs left it too late to mount a push?
I hope they throw it away. I mean, I kind of made the bold prediction at the start of the year that Chelsea were going to really decline as a club now, which was quite clearly very wrong. But it would be nice if they threw it away, simply for the sake of the Premier League, I think, in the sense of it can still show anyone can win it. It will show that the Premier League's still an interesting competition, in the sense of the team that started off the season winning everything doesn't end the season winning everything. That would be just kind of boring. Also, for England, really, because Chelsea have got, what, Gary Cahill? That's probably the only English player who actually plays Tottenham Hotspur. I mean, you look at that club and it's just England talent through and through. So I think that would be very good to see them go and have experiences being actual title winners, because that doesn't happen that often for a collection of young English players. So that would be very good. I don't like Tottenham. I don't like Chelsea. It's a case of which club do I like the least? Do I want to win? And I don't want Mos Pochettino to win anything, because that just is insulting. But I'd rather have Tottenham win it. And I think they really genuinely could throw it away. It's six games. It's not like it's two games. You go, oh, it's going to be a bit close. Six games is a hell of a lot of time.
Do you think for Tottenham it's now or never? Because next year they're having to play their entire season at Wembley, and they've not really shown particularly good form when they've been there.
Yeah, you throw that together with the fact that there's a good chance Pochettino will get poached at the end of the year. Barca are going to be looking for a manager. You've got to think he's going to be on their list. And when a manager leaves, yes, a club can get better. They can find someone else good. And Tottenham will certainly have the pedigree to go out and get a top manager. But you never know how it'll actually work out. Louis van Gaal was a top manager, and look how badly he did at Man United. So it's always kind of open in that sense. If they win it, they've got a basis to go to Pochettino and say, give Barcelona a year or two. That job isn't going to go anywhere for any long period of time. No one's going to take over and be there for 8 years. It's not going to happen. Go into the Champions League as title winners of England and see if you can win that as well. There's one more thing you've got to do then. So I think it gives them a bit more of an opportunity to really launch something from that point on. Yeah, I think if they don't do it this year, there is a lot of potential for it to all unravel, because suddenly you've got players like Harry Kane, Kyle Walker, Dele Alli, and they're thinking, is this actually going to be a club that competes? Do we need to move to win titles? You lose a manager as well, and these players are big fans of this manager. Suddenly that reason for leaving kind of starts to multiply. And as much as people say, why would they leave Tottenham for a club like Man United? Harry Kane's been linked a lot. At that point, it's kind of apples and oranges, and going for a club with maybe a bigger name or a better stadium, that kind of thing. I think, yeah, Tottenham really could do with winning it this year for their club's future.
And now behind them, Liverpool sitting pretty currently in third place, but they've got 5 games left. City 2 points behind with a game in hand. United in fifth place, 6 points behind, but 2 games in hand. I'm ruling Arsenal out at the moment because I think they're clear outsiders. But do you think it's Liverpool and City to get third and fourth now, or think United have a sniff?
I mean, I wouldn't personally rule out Arsenal. I think if you look between them and, say, Liverpool, I know there's 9 points in it, but they've got 2 games in hand. That could end up being 3 points in it between those two clubs, and that's third and sixth. Even Everton, I wouldn't rule out, ridiculously.
They've played an extra game still, haven't they, though?
Well, Everton.
Yeah, aren't they pretty much nearly everybody finished?
Yeah, they're on 33 games. They're on the same as Liverpool. So they would be much less likely, but there's still a possibility. I have to say, I would kind of like Man United to get top four, because that would mean one of City or Liverpool don't get it, and I dislike them more. But I just don't think they've done enough this season. I don't think they look like they're putting together, you know, masses of momentum into the last few games. Sure, a few players are picking up, Rashford, for instance, but it would, as much as I dislike City and Guardiola, as much as I really dislike Liverpool, it would kind of feel a bit unjustified if at the end of the season, United finished fourth, because they've just been crap. That being harsh.
You still there, Nick?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, mate. I was just taking that all in. No, it's I think Arsenal and United have got a chance. I think Everton, but they played 33 games, probably rules them out, but they can keep their run of form going. I think it will go down right to the wire, I think. But I still think United's best chance of going to Champions League football next year is to prioritise the Europa League. And to be fair, I think Mourinho has done that, or started doing that, certainly with resting some players. But I was very impressed with United on Sunday. I thought they looked very, very good, very well up for it, very well organised, a bit like a Mourinho night. So they can keep like that during the season, and they've definitely got a chance. Arsenal, I mean, it's Arsenal. They're so unpredictable, aren't they? 1 minute they're awful, next minute they look like well-beaten. The fact that every year we can think that they've blown top four, they pull sign cut back. So you never know of Arsenal. But if I was to bet, it probably would be the way it is now.
Now, earlier on today, the PFA Team of the Year was announced, and there's been a few raised eyebrows regarding the team. I'm going to quickly run through it, and then I'm going to ask you both for your thoughts on it. So in goal, it's David De Gea. Back four of Kyle Walker, David Luiz, Gary Cahill and Danny Rose. Midfield, Dele Alli and N'Golo Kante. On the wings, you've got Mane and Hazard. And then up front, Lukaku and Harry Kane. What are your thoughts, guys?
On the face of it, it's about right. I mean, there are players that I'd switch out. I kind of feel like with Mane and De Gea, they put in a Man United Liverpool player because they play for Man United and Liverpool, and they've got to include them. They've got to have someone from one of these clubs, or those fans will be very, very upset, won't they? David De Gea has not been
off-year running that De Gea's been in it.
David De Gea has not been the best goalkeeper in the year this year. If it's my opinion, he's the best keeper in the Premier League. That's my opinion, but that isn't what the award is. The award is not for the best keeper in the Premier League. It's the same as the Ballon d'Or. It's not the best player in the world. It's in that year. Who has been the best keeper in the Premier League this year? For my money, it's Tom Heaton. I almost kind of don't like saying that because it's Burnley. I quite like Burnley, but not that much. I don't really think he's that great of a player. But he's been the best keeper this year. That's who
I'd
go
far. I also agree that De Gea shouldn't have been the keeper of the year, but I'd have gone Courtois.
I think Courtois has been flattered by the defence in front of him, in the sense the defence in front of him has been very, very good. I don't think he's anything special as a keeper. I think he's kind of lucked out in terms of his moves. I think he's a bit like Fraser Forster. People who don't watch him regularly think he's really good. People who watch him regularly go, actually, no, he's got a constant mistake in him. He's a flappy as hell. He doesn't ever hold anything, and he doesn't like coming for crosses. I'm not really, really convinced by Courtois at all.
I had it right back. I didn't have De Gea in goal, but I did have a United player, Valencia, as right back instead of Kyle Walker. I think Valencia's been United's best player all season, and for me, just pips it ahead of Walker.
Yeah, he's been outstanding, Valencia. I can't say a word against him in that regards. I do think Walker has been better. I mean, there's a sort of justification. Valencia's gone into a position he's not overly familiar with at right back. You know, he's traditionally been a right mid or a right winger. He's played there a couple of times, but it's not his position. So there's, you know, you kind of got to give him points for that. At the same time, if I was thinking to myself, right, based only on last season and ignoring things like age and nationality, if I wanted my team to sign one of those two players, based only on this season, I'd go for Walker, because I think he's been really an all-round all-rounder and his influence in terms of what he does down that right wing in a Spurs side that doesn't always have that much width has been very understated.
See, I think he's great going forward, but I still think he's susceptible actually at defending.
I think there's a basis for that, but I think he's really tightened up his game a lot this year. He seems to have matured quite a lot. He's no longer quite as rash. He's no longer quite as impulsive on the pitch. And I think that's kind of shown in the fact that he's not really picked up masses of bookings or cards or any kind. He's been very consistent with them, and I think that's the real point. As much as Valencia's been, I'd probably agree, United's best player, Tottenham, on the other hand, have been a very consistent side this season, whereas United, there's been spells where even being the best player was at best being a 7 out of 10. So I think, yeah, it's a close one. It is a very close one, but I'd still go with Walker. I think they got that one right.
Now, in the centre-back roles, Kale, for me, has been the weakest of the three main centre-backs for Chelsea this season. So I'd have even picked Azpilicueta over Kale in the centre-back role. But I'd have gone for another Spurs guy in Alderweireld. I think we can never pronounce.
Alderweireld.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had him at Saints for a year. We learned how to pronounce his name. Yeah, as much as I kind of I'm loathe to admit it, I agree completely. Alderweireld has been brilliant. He's one of the best defenders in the world. We could have had a centre-back partnership of Virgil van Dijk and Toby Alderweireld, but, you know, we're selling one, and we already didn't get the other one. But, yeah, that's very sad for me personally, but God, he's been good.
He is top draw. The last change I would make would be, as you've already mentioned, Mane getting in there because he's a Liverpool player. I think Mane has been exceptional for Liverpool when he's played this season. It really surprised me how he's come on. Like you've mentioned before, that he was just not consistent at all for Southampton. He seemed to have developed more of that into his game. But how the PFA have not got Sanchez of Arsenal in that team, I have no idea. And I'd certainly put him in that position.
Yeah, it's a case of almost like he's done well for Liverpool, therefore he's in with a shout. I mean, if Sadio Mane had even done this for Southampton over the course of his season, he wouldn't have got in that team. It's a case of a club, the shirt he's wearing has kind of come before all of that. Yeah, the whole basis of if you're putting a player up for player of the year and then not including him in the team of the year over a player who's not been included in the player of the year, it kind of does seem a little bit ridiculous. I'd have gone for Sanchez as well. I think if I was honestly making decisions as much as I don't want this team to be just Chelsea and Tottenham, maybe Eriksen. I know he doesn't really play right wing, but it's almost a case of sometimes you can just squeeze them in there. He's been top draw this season. The amount of games he's pulled out of the fire for Spurs, where we really didn't look like getting anything, is crazy. So yeah, Sanchez, Eriksen, as I said, I don't think I'd have included them in my top four wingers this year.
Do you think Eriksen goes under the radar of it because Spurs have got so many English players that the press then always jump on the bandwagon of Ali and Kane, whilst Eriksen himself has just been so good?
Yeah, it's a case of that. It's also a case of he's never really linked with the big clubs. He's never you never really see his name like Harry Kane. You do see him getting linked with, you know, United and the big moves. I've seen him linked with Real Madrid a few times, even clubs like that. And if you've not got a player who's really getting onto the back pages, he can kind of coast under radar. I do think one thing that kind of links into it is his nationality. He's Danish, and no one really gives a shit about Denmark at all. People talk a hell of a lot about Coutinho, and if Coutinho was Finnish, no one would care. He's Brazilian, so, everything he does, all that little turn he did that literally 12-year-olds can do, that's because of Brazilian, and, look at all the amazing Brazilian football. It's a case of, he's Danish. I mean, is the stuff he's doing really that good? It's quite intelligent play, because we always think, those Scandinavians, they're smart. It's again, I think there's this sort of unconscious bias we have when it comes to looking at footballers and deciding what kind of player they are before we actually even watch them, based on where they're from, how tall they are, what kind of goals they score, what kind of passes they make. Eriksen's been top drawer. I'd say he's up there as being one of Spurs' best players this year, a player who I genuinely think could play for any team in the world. He'd get into that Barca team, he'd get into that Real Madrid team. I think he's that good and he's that consistent. So yeah, I think him or Sanchez, because Sanchez has absolutely pulled off. If it wasn't for Sanchez, Arsenal would be having an atrocious season. They'd be down there with us and West Brom. So yeah.
And that's it, like you said before, that there has to be a Liverpool and a Man United in there. It's unusual for not an Arsenal player to be in there, especially in a poll. Arsenal.
Yeah, but I think it is one of those cases. People always, no one ever wants to put in a player who's performed well for a bad club. And I mean, both a club that isn't generally regarded as being very good or a club that's not had a good season, despite the fact that player can very easily have been absolutely outstanding. If Virgil van Dijk had, you know, not got injured when he did and he'd played the entire season, I'd say there should have been a basis for him getting into one of those centre-back spots, because his performances over the course of the season, I'd say, were much better than a player like Gary Cahill's. But it's a case of what are they achieving? I mean, even Matty Phillips, what he's he's been doing at West Brom, I think has been exceptional, and that's gone completely under the radar how good he's been this year. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a surprise, and it's happened with Arsenal because they're out of the top four, and so people are kind of going, oh, if that's their entire basis for living is top four and they're not doing that, then clearly none of them have done any kind of good. There have been some good players for Arsenal this season, and I think Sanchez is obviously the leading light. I'd say Cech's had a decent season without being amazing, especially considering, you know, the fact he's getting a lot older as a goalkeeper. I'd say Bellerin's had a pretty good season as well, but obviously these players are going to go under the radar because they're not achieving as much. It's kind of frustrating, because at the same time, like I said, I would have wanted someone like Tom Heaton to get goalkeeper of the season, but people are just going to say, oh, he concedes quite a few goals. Yeah, but Christ, look at the ones he stops them from conceding regularly, every single game. That saves you points.
Okay, so moving on now from the PFA Team of the Year to our very own Young Premier League 11 of the Year, which is voted for by our Twitter followers, so thank you to everybody who's taken part so far. There's not many left to go now, so I'm going to blast through the team as it stands. We've got Pickford in goal, a back four of Bellerin, Bailey, Maguire and Robertson, and a midfield centred duo of Dele Alli and James Ward-Prowse. In the last week, you've been voting for the first of the attacking midfield options. In reverse order, the last place was Januzaj with 3%, Iwobi was third with 13%, Martial, a gallant second with 23%, but runaway winner, and a player that, for me, I think as the season developed, has gone from strength to strength is Leroy Sané with an immense 61%. On Friday lunchtime, we're going to be adding up the next poll on Twitter, and you'll have up until Monday to cast your vote. What do you think to Sané?
I mean, he's bloody good. It's really annoying how bloody good he is. Not just because he's playing for City, who I despise, and because he's a Guardiola signing, who I despise. He's also German, and God, they've got enough good players. Can we have some of them, please? I watched him the other day against Southampton when we lost 3-0. He just destroyed us. His pace is ridiculous. People think players like Theo Walcott have been quick. This guy would annihilate someone like Walcott. He's ridiculously quick. The way he actually managed to even keep up with the play when De Bruyne went through and played it across, it was insane. I can't think of we would have had a single player who could have possibly done that. And you know, we're talking about professional athletes here. And it's not just his pace, his decision-making is incredible. He's not a player like Navas, where every single time he actually gets down the line, he puts in a terrible ball. He puts in good balls. He's always threatening the attacker. He reminds me very much of Sterling in that season he had for Liverpool, where everyone was thinking, Christ, isn't he good? He's literally doing the right things every single time he gets the ball. So if he can maintain that, if he can do that for a season or two more, he'll be one of the best wingers in the world.
You look at that City strike force going forward for the next few seasons, and obviously Aguero at some point is probably going to leave. He doesn't look like a Pep guy, and the injury to Jesus probably came in at a good time for him because he was already on the sidelines at that point. But in Sterling, Sané and Jesus, is the average age, I think, 20 there?
It's got to be something like that.
That's a strike force that's going to be together for probably a fair few years, and it looks a very good one.
I think
looks up there with Monaco and Dortmund, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it does look very promising for their future, but it's always the case of a note of caution. Best laid plans often turn to absolutely nothing. You know, man plans, God laughs, and all that kind of thing. I'm an atheist, so I don't particularly think he's laughing about anything, but, you know, that's the whole thing. With young players, signing players on potential and all that, like, as much as they can have, you know, seasons where they look really good, but then instantly they can drop away for reasons you can't explain. Sometimes it's injuries, so they just start picking up a ton of injuries. Sometimes they just get worse and you don't know what it is. Raheem Sterling, you know, last season was nothing really special, was he? I mean, he's had his poor years as being a younger player with potential. He's also had those years where you think, good God, he really could be one of the best in the world. I think he's got that potential. It's the case of whether or not he'll live up to it. Players like Gabriel Jesus, I don't know if we've seen enough yet to be able to really come to any conclusion about what level he could be at. Because there's always the risk, these young players, of course, that they peaked. They aren't going to get any better. It seems ridiculous, but I mean, you look at Ross Barkley. And I look at Ross Barkley and I think there's a player who will not improve. He's hit his level. He's not getting any better than that. He doesn't know how to at this point. At this point, it would take real genuine brains, and I'm really not sure about that with him. But
well, I think that was evident in the nightclub a week ago.
We'll not go into that, otherwise we'll get banned just like the Sun, but I don't think they ever thought he was, you know, going to end up on Countdown one day, let's put it that way. I mean, I think with young players, there's so much that's open to question about how it's all going to work out. Even whether or not they'll stay, because, I mean, if Bayern Munich came in a year's time and put in an £80 million bid for Sané, he is German, I think he'd probably go. So you never really know how it'll work out, and as much as we're almost in that sort of football manager mode of going, oh, isn't it good you've got all these young players? Let's face it, the football managers very rarely actually got it right when predicting players for the future. And it kind of works out in reality the exact same way. A lot of players who we all think are going to be amazing just turn into nothing.
Well, last thing I wanted to discuss, and this is something we briefly mentioned early in the show, is the Chinese Super League. Now, with wages of over 600k per week for the likes of Tevez, and the president of Jianjin Guangjin offering 650k a week to Costa, is there going to be a tipping point in which the Chinese League not only appeals to what are deemed the mercenary element of the game, but will actually become a real powerhouse in football to rival the English, Spanish and German leagues?
Short answer or long answer?
Short and then long.
Short answer, no. Long answer, really no. I mean, the problem you've got to understand with the Chinese Super League is it's not like you've suddenly just got a league where you're getting a whole bunch of investment and that's all there really is to it. It's not like the IPL where you think, actually, no, it could maintain because it's got the popularity, it's got the interest and all that a lot. Chinese Super League, the big problem you have is the fans don't care. But it goes so much deeper than that because you think, right, there's your long-term money is your Chinese fans. Because if you've got empty stadiums, no one's really going to want to bid for the right. It's not big money anyway. And that's where it's all going to come from because eventually this has to turn sustainable. Now let's go to the other side of things and say, right, it's probably not that sustainable what they're doing. So is there actually going to be the continued push from the country, China, to have this kind of dominant league, to have this, you know, dominant football team? Are they going to keep promoting their businessmen to start pumping the money in? And the answer here is no. Because in terms of the Chinese Premiership, it is on a knife edge constantly. I mean, currently we've got Xi Jinping in, and he is a big fan of football. He wants China to be a big sporting nation. But that could all change in a heartbeat if the political circumstances could change. Look at Korea. If shit goes down in Korea, are they going to give a damn about football? Is that where they're going to be wanting to put in their money? No, of course not. Are the players going to want to be moving out of it? No, of course not. So it can change so easy on that. And you're going to have a point as well, especially in China, where the economy does eventually collapse. The housing bubble in China has been talked about for years, and I know this is a football show, but when that goes, you're going to see just the economy of China and probably the world go down the toilet with it. And the money in football then will shrink and go away, because suddenly they haven't really got any ties to it. It was fun while it lasted, but let's pull the hell out of this. I know. I think if people think it's going to turn into a big deal just because a lot of money's into it, they haven't learned their lessons from clubs like Anji. You know, that Russian club no one even knows of anymore, where if you're doing it short term and you aren't laying the proper foundations and you don't have the actual support to sustain it, it won't work.
What would you consider, though, as a support? Because, like, the top team for attendance-wise is getting on average now 45,000 fans for every game. Now, that's a decent number.
Right, yeah, it's a decent number, but in terms of support, you're looking at a hell of a lot more, because it's on top of support, you've got interest. You've also got, without meaning to make it sound like a business thing, return customer base. How long are they going to be able to actually keep these fans from coming back, keep them interested? Because it's not like they've got tons of history, or they've got, you know, a real deep connection to the city's sporting institutions, because they don't really have them. These have been completely invented, it's completely plastic, and it's the same as the American teams in the MLS. There's a bit of a flourish at first, but it all very quickly starts to decline as things peter out, because the money eventually will stop being pumped in like crazy. They're already putting in measures to kind of cut that down on. For Chinese players are dreadful. I don't know who's actually watched a Chinese game, but the Chinese players are genuinely awful. So there's going to get a point where it just, the balance goes wrong and it's no longer got the novelty to it. I don't think in 20 years' time we'll be talking about the Chinese Super League. I don't think that at all. Possibly there are some other leagues, you know, around the world where they could really build up a little bit. I think the Russian League has potential. That's got a lot more potential than it did 10 years ago. So I think there are leagues around the world that could do it. I think the MLS could maybe have a bit of a surge if they can actually generate the interest more in America. That'll be their big issue. But China, there's just too much going against it, and it's too much on a whim. It's too much on the spur of the moment, and all you need is the whims that drove that to change, and the Chinese Super League dies.
Well, on that bombshell, it's the end of the episode of the V2 podcast. I hope you've enjoyed my stint at host. My thanks to both Shane and Nick taking part. If you'd like to listen to any of the other shows or sister shows, you can do so at v2football.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at v2football and discuss football on our forum, which is 606v2.com. Thank you very much, and good night.
Good night.